Cougar fans, it is time.
Touchdown! What a grab!
It's time to raise your colors, raise your voice, and join in on the raucous roundtable about your favorite team, the BYU Cougars.
20, 15, 10, 5, touchdown!
It's time to tailgate. Cougar Tailgate, where BYU sports fandom lives. And here's your host, Lauren McClain.
What's up, Cougar Nation? I'm Lauren McClain, and we're here to tailgate with you, doing what we do best, talking all things BYU Cougars. For this week's roundtable discussion, we have the 1984 championship running back, the Turbo Tongan, Lake Hemuli, and his sons, BYU TV sports producer Hema. What's up, Hema?
Malo Lele.
And former Stanford and BYU fullback Houston. How's it going? Guys, great. Thank you so much for being here. This is great.
Yeah, it's great to be here.
Were you guys excited to be here, all three of you? A little nervous, a little... What's going to come out of all your mouths? Okay.
Well, I know. You should be more nervous.
I should be the nervous one, right?
Well, I'm a little nervous because I don't know what these two is going to, at home.
Yeah.
I can control the conversation. But here, I don't know what they're going to say. So.
Buckle up, BYU Nation.
Hey, Mooley's with an open mic. That's scary right there. There are five kids in the Hey Mooley family. Hema, Helam, Heaven, Houston, Harrison.
Yes.
Is that right?
Yes,
all right. Yes. Lucky, what made you and Panya decide on all H names for your kids?
Well, let me give you a little background.
Okay.
When Panya was having Hema, I wrote down the name Lucky. I named him after me. But because my wife felt like that I was a rascal during that time, she changed it to Hema, which is my brother, because he was an angel. He stayed with us when he was at BYU. So it started the H name with Hema.
Okay.
And then when we had Helam, we go, okay, we got to look for H name with the five letters. If you look at all the names,
wow.
It's like H name, Hema is four, Helam is five, Heaven is six, Houston is seven, and then Harrison is eight.
Oh, so, my gosh.
So that's, we...
Too much work.
That is a lot of work. That is a lot of work.
Yeah. But it's interesting all the how we come up with names,
Yes.
Yeah.
So did Hema come out more like you or like your brother?
Depends.
Depends. No, I tell you, Hema was really, really a good child. First to have a first child like Hema. And I think that's what makes us want to have more kids. It's because he was so good, right?
Yeah.
But then when everybody else start coming, it's like, oh, what the heck are we doing?
Until that came out, dude, they were like, this is a gold mine. Then they wanted to have even more after
you. Yeah.
They did. Yeah. So, it's crazy.
Oh, my gosh. I love it. Harrison is serving a mission for the church right now in Tonga. How cool is that for you? Because you were born in Tonga.
I was born and raised in Tonga till I was 15.
Okay.
And then my family migrated to Hawaii. And it's, at first my dad wanted everybody to be sealed in a temple. Tonga didn't have a temple at the time. We were going to New Zealand. So he had an opportunity to come to Hawaii. And then he brought us to Hawaii. So he wanted our family to be sealed in the temple. And then that's how we ended up in Hawaii.
Wow.
Yeah, and I was raised in Tonga, speak Tongans, and then when my kids were calling and missing, I keep hoping that one of them will go to Tonga.
Yeah.
It wasn't until the last one, and then I think he's the righteous one. He's not the favorite one, but he's the righteous one.
I was going to ask you how you pick a favorite, but you just answered it right there. That's really cool. Is he enjoying it there?
He is loving it there, and I think... not only that, but Richard Kafusi is his mission president.
Oh,
there.
Wow.
Yeah, so there's a history there with the BYU, too.
Wow,
so.
I love it. I love that. Hema, what were family dinners like growing up?
I don't know. They're pretty typical Polynesian family dinners, Like, we all ate together. We all ate a lot of, Tongan food and stuff like that. But, that's a difficult question because, me and my brothers were constantly eating, all the time. So, family dinners is, would just happen to coordinate everyone eating at the same time. But, we were mostly eating all day kind of thing.
Yeah, but if you're late to the dinner table, you miss all the good stuff. All the good stuff is gone.
That's true. So, here's a good story about, family dinners. Was it you that was choking?
So, I was just about to say
okay,
the same.
You can tell
Let's
the story.
Hear it. Let's hear it.
So, if you're at dinner, you're trying to consume as much as you can because everyone's eating. I was always the first one there, and I was big. I was a chubby kid, still am. But I remember one time I was just scarfing down some food, like absolutely just destroying my meal, not even chewing. And, you know, everyone's kind of just chatting and everyone's just having fun. And all of a sudden, I'm just like, because I have like, I'm just full of food. And my brother's over there washing the dishes. It's Hema. And he's just like, my mom's freaking out.
She's not the most like
calm
person. Like your she'll mom? Freak out. Yeah, she freaks out. Doesn't know what to do. She's just like, oh no, he's choking. Oh! And she just like stands there right next to him. Like, and I'm like, someone should probably help him. And so I stopped washing the dishes and I went and gave him the Heimlich.
Wow,
it was a very casual Heimlich. He just turns around, puts the washcloth down. He goes, everything comes out, and my mom's like freaking out, crying. My siblings are laughing, and my dad's just like
shaking his head.
He's like,
I was too far from them. You know, I was on the other side of the dinner table, so I would just keep eating.
Someone just like, will help him.
Like, that's what you get for eating so fast.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I said.
How old were you when this happened?
I know I was like younger than 8.
Yeah.
It was before Harrison was born. So I remember it was like down in our Bountiful House. So
you owe him, and then you vote him.
Let me think that, and then he named me pretty much. So
I did.
I guess
him.
I got two. Really? Got two on me for now.
Yeah,
for
yeah.
now.
You named him.
Yeah.
You just gave your parents the idea for the name.
Well, the idea comes from I remember when he was born, my mom and dad were trying to find a name. Yeah.
Yeah.
And we had just seen
Apollo 13
at the movie theater. And I was like, oh, that'd be funny if his name was Houston. And then whenever something happened, we could be like, oh, Houston, we have a problem. Yeah. It literally was a pun.
It was a pun.
Yeah. And Locke, were you like, I actually like it?
Oh, I did. I said, oh, yeah. Yeah, sure. It fits the 8th name.
Yeah, it was perfect. Yeah,
it was shit. Kicked my mom's belly then.
Stop it. I actually love it. I think it's awesome. Houston, what role did football play in the lives of you guys growing up? Did you guys play a lot in the backyard? Did you watch it a lot? What role did it play?
I would say everything. Like, I think football made an impact more than I think anyone would ever know. It's, you know, growing up, watching our dad play football, we all played. Hema played, Helan played, I played, Harrison played. And it's because of those same experiences, you know, that brought my dad to Utah. You know, my parents met because of football. You know, my whole family, I really do think football plays a really pivotal role. And how we were raised and how we even came to be. So,
yeah, not only that, but football, it was a big role. For me, it was as a parent at the time, we just wanted to keep the kids busy.
Yeah.
You know, I think we moved back. We were living in San Diego in 92. We moved back to Utah in 92. And in San Diego, when we were there, the gang activities was going rampant in San Diego. So when we moved, I said, we're going to raise our kids in Utah. So we moved back to Utah, West Valley, and the gang. And then we said, okay, we're going to move to a place where the kids don't have to choose between the gang. Yeah. And so that's how we ended up in Bountiful.
Yeah.
And then we keep the kids so they don't go after school and mess around.
Yeah.
So we keep them busy. You know, right after school, it's football, and then football, or if they have church activities, they do that. And then after that, it's home and sleep. So we keep them tired so they can go home and sleep instead
eat
of going
sleep.
Sneaking around the neighborhood.
Like, that's interesting because I just watched Tony Finau on that Netflix series that he's in, Full Swing or something like that. And his dad mentioned that exact same thing. They grew up in West Valley, and he said, I just wanted to keep him busy. you know, he said, I didn't want to get him involved in all that stuff. So you have one girl. Amongst the boys, Locke, was she into football and sports as well, or what was that like?
I always say that if she was a boy, she would still be my All American.
Yeah. Really,
she's tough.
She was rough. She played soccer when she was just a young one, and she was elbowing kids so she can get the And I said, man, she's got the
she's got it.
Same with volleyball when she played volleyball a little older. She was mean, man.
Yeah, mean. I remember we were little. And we had boxing gloves. We bought those two pairs, and we were all just playing around. And Heaven's like, oh, like let's fight. I was like, okay, like I'll take it easy on my sister. But she started throwing punches.
She's like 1-2.
And I was like, I was getting like actually worked. I was like, oh, stop.
Well, she had to. What do you expect? She got four brothers.
But we were just like sparring and like thudding each other, and then she's like, bah, bah. She's doing the.
all of a sudden she got the Ali fish. Starts shuffling. I'm like, yo.
I love it. I love it. Lockie, you left BYU as its all-time leading rusher, national championship in your back pocket, heels of the successes of Jim McMahon's Steve Young, playing for one of the greatest college football coaches in history, Lavelle Edwards. When you look back, how would you describe that time in your life? Because it probably kind of seems a little bit surreal now, a number of years later. How would you describe it?
I think it was the greatest time for an athlete to grow up and then play under a head coach who loves you first before football, you know. So I think I contribute a lot of my success to him because of the way he handled adversity, the way he talked to his players. You know, I don't think I ever played for anybody who was as genuine as Lavelle. Mm. As he, you know, and that's one of the biggest things why I came to BYU is because of him, his honesty, character was phenomenal, you know. So I tell you a story. When he came to recruit me, BYU, McBride was just hanging out in La Jolla, you know. So
Ron McBride,
Ron McBride was wanted me to come into wanted me to sign with Utah.
Ooh.
And then Lavelle came in, and then we were walking down the stairs from our place, and then he looked at me. He goes, "Lockie, you know that long hair is going to be it has to be cut when you come to BYU." You know, and then I said, "Do I have to?" He said, "Yes, you have to." So, I mean, right then I knew he was a man of character.
Yeah.
And then he's, you know, and I tell you, you know, I tried to grow my hair when I was playing for Lavelle. And then I never get to see Lavelle during the week or, you know, other than practice, right? Show it at practice, and then I don't hang out around the football office because he's going to call me to his office. And I don't like the small talk with Lavelle because I always get nervous, you know. But then, you know, every month before we get our checks, we get a little green dot on our sign-up sheets. And then the green dot is just see Lavelle first before you get your check. So he took that opportunity to have a little one-on-one with me, you know, tell me, okay, how you doing? I'd never get to see you outside the practice and stuff, but he was kind of like the father figure for me while I was away from home, you know. And I tell you, you'll never run into or being coached by a man like that, you know.
I love that.
Yeah.
And he's looking down at heaven right now and saying, "Lockie, you have a ponytail again." what are we going to do about that? I told you, Andy got a beard. I told you not to do that.
I know, but things change at BYU nowadays.
That's right. It actually is true. Emma and Houston, what's one of your favorite stories that your dad told you from his playing days? And I know I read an article, you guys have talked about this before, that you didn't talk a lot about the national championship with your kids growing up, but what's one of the favorite stories that he's told you from his playing days? Start with him.
One of my favorite stories, there's so many, but one of my favorites, I'll start with, it has to do with the late Coach French. And there was a game where our Uncle Vi, he like fumbled two or three times or once or twice or something like that. He fumbled, and after the play, Coach French comes up to my dad and just starts yelling at him, just like reaming into him because he thought he was Vi. And so,
really?
But my dad, he doesn't say anything. He just sits there and he's just like nodding, just taking it or whatever. And then Coach French, you know, runs out of air and then leaves in a huff, you know. And my dad just didn't say anything, right? And then much later in the game, Coach French comes back. He's like, "Lucky, why didn't you tell me I was yelling at you and not Vi?" And my dad basically said like, you know, Vi's got a hard enough time right now. He needs to figure it out. So, you know.
Yeah. And then just a little background to that, too, is that Vi and Kaala just had Landon. And then they were traveling with us to the...
We're talking about Vi Sigahema, right?
Vi Sigahema.
Yeah,
Elder
okay.
Sigahema.
Elder.
And they just had Landon. And this is the Citrus Bowl in Florida. And Landon was having a hard time sleeping that night. And I knew Vi knock on our door late morning. They say, "Hey, can I come in and sleep? Because Landon's just crying, you know." So we knew going into the game that he's going to be tired.
Yeah.
And then I think that's a little bit of distractions that, you know, during that game. And then I don't blame him, you know. And then when Coach Franz, you know, I wasn't even to the sideline then. He met me halfway. And he was just reaming me.
You're like, what did I do?
Yeah. And then I just went and sat down, and then I just nodded my head. I said, you know, just go away. Yeah.
That's
and then
amazing.
He finally left, but yeah.
Vi better have thanked you for taking the heat for him. A lot. Houston, what's one of your favorite
That
stories?
Actually is like my favorite story. And one thing, it's not really a story, but just like my dad would like throw in side commentary to like rewatch like this 84 year like highlight. And I would just like sit there and love hearing my dad. He'd be like, "Oh yeah, I tore that guy's ACL." Very like nonchalant. And it was like Michigan, and the guy intercepted the ball, and my dad just comes flying. Like, not even like, some people are pretty hesitant to like hit on an interception, but all of a sudden you see this 35 flash and just take out this guy. And just very casually, I'm like, that's a hard hit. He's like, "Yeah, I heard his ACL." Or like, he would demolish this guy on a, with I think it was Kelly Smith is running behind him. And he's like, "Oh yeah, I beat him." I'm like, "You beat him? You laid him in the floor." He disintegrated. Like, I think they said disintegrating block, but it's the side commentary, even to this day, is like the funniest thing for me to watch and to listen as my dad talks about that year.
I love that. That's so cool. How do you guys stay close as a family? What are some of the fun things that you do together, Houston?
Growing up as a kid, we used to have a monthly meeting with like all the Hemulis in Utah. Like my Uncle Hema, who played here in the 90s, my dad, any other Hemuli family that was here in Utah, we would pick a place, someone's house, and we all come together, meet, bring food, big potluck, and it's almost like a family home evening on Sundays as well. So it was, I feel like that still is why I'm still pretty tight with at least this side's Hemuli family, and even my cousins I still chat to.
Lucky, was that something that was important for you? Obviously family, you got a lot of kids, you have a lot of siblings, and they're all around. Was that something that was important to you and your wife as you started having children?
It was. And then I think we thought that it's so important for the kids to know their cousins and their families. And that it was also important for my dad to have everybody get together once a month on Sundays to, you know, just talk, share food, and socialize,
yeah.
You know, and then we, you know, at the end of each meeting, it's like he say a few, you know, he's a man of a few words, you know, and then he'll say, you know, make sure you say your prayer every day, you know, to the grandkids or a little nuggets for the kids to do during the month, you know, but yeah. It was important. And now it's so hard for us. We live in Arizona now, and all our kids are here. We try to get to Utah all the time, but every time we get to Utah, one of our kids will say, "Okay, Mom and Dad's are here. Why don't we get together?" Like Sunday, Hema's wife texts, "Let's get together on Sunday. Mom and Dad's are here." So we did get together. We try to get together every time we're in town. So it's important for us. It's important to keep the family together and to share and to support each other.
I think one good thing, one consequence of like us having those meetings growing up, like as a whole family and things like that, is that soon as, you know, my parents moved away, like me and my siblings, we still get together like often, and we still want to feel that familiar, you know, camaraderie in a sense that familial bond, and like we keep it up even if my parents aren't around. So that's kind of, you know, you talk about like eternal consequences. That's kind of the fruits of like, you know, our grandfather having those monthly meetings, or our dad bringing our family together. Like now that they're gone, or when they're in back home in Arizona, me and my siblings still get together and do that same thing. So
Hema, what's one thing that you loved from your upbringing and that you learned from your mom and dad that you are trying to implement into your own very large family?
Oh, I mean, mostly, you know, the importance of family. Like one thing I remember my parents teaching us is like, they basically, you know, we fought, like we squabbled and like and stuff like that. But it was never super serious because, you know, we knew that once we got outside of our house, we were on the same team, you know, like, so I would walk my siblings to school and back and all that stuff because, like,
pick us up from school too.
Yeah. Cause I'm supposed to protect them, be in charge of them, you know, as a family, we do that, you know? And so I try to teach my children now that, yeah, like, you know, you bicker and fight sometimes cause you're kids, but you know, you're on the same team and you guys, you know, love each other. And when you're outside of the house, that's all you have is each other. And that's the sort of thing that I learned that I'm teaching my children right now. So.
Mm-hmm. I love that. What about for you, Houston?
And I would say I'm very spoiled in the sense I'm the second youngest. So I had, you know, my parents, my oldest brother, who's always taking care of us. And kind of just the message of, like, you take care of family. Like, that's, there's a phrase, it takes a village. You know, yeah. It really does. It takes everyone to raise everyone. And my goal is to, you know, if someone needs help, if someone needs something like service, like willingly give. That's what I learned from my dad. He would do things for us without even saying anything, or even people in our ward. You know, someone's moving, someone needs help. My dad's just there automatically, nothing said. And that's, I think, a big trait that I still want to implement, just service and you know, do what you want to do for your family and friends.
I love that so much. We're going to do a little bit of a trivia to see how well you guys know your dad's BYU career. Emma, don't look.
I don't need that.
All right. All right. Here we go. Number one is, so Locke, this is just for your sons here. Where does Locke rank all time on the BYU rushing yard ranking?
Currently?
Currently.
He's 10th.
7th. You're both wrong. They come on. Your dad's higher than that, guys. 7th.
Give me some credit.
All right, here we go. How many total rushing yards did Locke have in his career? We'll let you get kind of an about number. What's your guess, Emma?
Let's see. You were there 3 years, right? Or did you do four?
You did four. I was four, but I play mainly three.
Locke, do you know the answer to this? Do you know how many yards?
I know it's over 2,000.
Okay. Yep. He's right.
3,048.
Incorrect.
4,500.
Whoa! 2,710. Yeah. You're making up for the last question. Okay. How many rushing TDs did Locke have in his career?
14.
Oh, I was going to say 14. I'll say
30.
Oh,
what?
I meant 14 for a half.
Oh, did you say total? Oh, I thought half.
Just double that
career.
Number. No, yeah, that's about. That's
we're doing so bad right now.
All right. The last one here is, in what game did Locke have his career high in rushing yards?
Utah? Oh, no.
Nope.
New Mexico.
Incorrect. I'll give you a hint. It was in 1986.
Ooh.
Locke, what was it?
Wait.
UTEP.
Nope.
Oh, UTEP was 84. Or...
Locke, do you know?
I don't even
remember.
It was Wyoming.
Okay.
Oh.
And you rushed for 177 yards.
Okay, little Wyoming story real quick.
All right, let's hear it.
So growing up, I hated Wyoming because of the story that my dad told me about how I think you were a freshman. I don't remember.
Yeah, I was
but
a freshman.
There is a story about where they're in the locker room, you know, at War Memorial or whatever it's called.
Whatever that place is.
They're about to leave the tunnel or leave the locker rooms, and Lavelle told you guys, oh, everyone put your helmets on. My dad's like, that's weird. Like, we're just warming up and stuff. As soon as my dad puts his helmet on and takes a step outside, someone whipped him in the head with a bat. Then, like, you know, he tells us stories about how they would beat them so bad in Laramie, like, embarrass them that people would throw, like, beer bottles full of piss and stuff like that.
Yeah, our locker room is underneath the stand. And it's one of those, it's not close, you know, so it's got holes in the middle. So when we walk towards, walking into the locker room, we can see beer bottles are coming down.
Oh, my gosh.
Can water bottles coming down.
Lavelle didn't hate anybody, but he hated Laramie.
Oh, yeah.
He hated Laramie, Wyoming.
In fact, my favorite photo of Houston is, it goes real hard, is when you played Wyoming here.
Yeah,
played Wyoming. And there's like a picture of you like, standing up facing like the Wyoming huddle.
It's
dope. BYU is the best. Wyoming every day, any day.
Screw the Cowboys.
Oh, I love it. All right, guys, that does it for us today. Thanks again to Locke, Hema, Houston, Hemuli for coming on the show with me. Carter Bond and Tori Kimball helped produce this episode with senior producer Terry South. You can join the Cougar Tailgate wherever you get your podcasts on Apple, TuneIn, Stitcher, Spotify, or on BYUradio.org. Cougar Tailgate is a production of BYU Radio.